Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Great to have you along on this Friday. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Thanks for being with us. Well, the race for Florida governor continues to be the focus of the nation this Friday, with progressive Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum and conservative former Congressman Ron DeSantis representing starkly different visions for the future of this state. Now, you might have seen DeSantis resigned from his seat in Congress this week. He's going to focus full time on the governor's race. Could be because a new poll shows his opponent, Andrew Gillum, with a slight lead right now among Florida voters.
This is shaping up to be an epic race, Melissa. It is guaranteed to certainly feature and fire up passion, lots of rhetorical fireworks already, and certainly is going to be exploding for this battle to lead the nation's third most populous state here in this off-presidential election year. On the ballot are more than just the two candidates for governor, certainly. This contest also a bit of a referendum on everything from progressive politics. Can they succeed in the purple swing state that Florida is? To also national divisions on race. And of course, some will make it into a referendum on President Trump in advance of a 2020 presidential election. So we have got a lot to talk about, and we want to hear from you throughout the hour. 305-995-1800 is the phone number. How are you seeing this governor's race shape up? The political labels of progressive or conservative, are they meaningful to you, or is it just shorthand or a crutch? 305-995-1800. Carolyn Guinness is along with us, executive editor of the Miami New Times. She's also president of the South Florida Black Journalists Association. Carolyn, great to have you on. Thanks for joining us here today. Mira Khan Adams is a media producer and freelance writer. She is also with us here at our studios in Miami. So ladies, lots to talk about. Let's jump right in. And let's go ahead first for Carolyn with the Miami Times. Yes, my apologies. I misidentified you, Carolyn, with the Miami Times. Are you seeing this as a progressive versus conservative race?
No, I see it as a time for change. The Republicans had, almost 20 years to show us what we have and what they have. And basically what we have are, people living in poverty, people can't afford to live where they want to live, environmental crises. I mean, the list goes on and on. So, we can make it about whatever we want. It could be about race. It could be about, socialism versus mm-hmm. capitalism. But it really is about whether if we want to continue on this path or if we want to try something new, somebody who is listening to the electorate and offering solutions to the problems that they're talking about.
Myra, you wrote earlier this week that you really see this Gillum-DeSantis race as a national bellwether. It's going to test where we are, you wrote, politically as a country. There's going to be a lot on the ballot in Florida. And of course, President Trump is hanging over these candidates in so many ways. We'll talk about that as we continue. But first and foremost, do you see Floridians being asked to decide which vision they support, a very progressive vision or a very conservative vision? No middle ground for moderate voters, really, in Florida to choose from when they look at these two candidates. The parties are so polarized. We see that reflected right here in Florida as we hear Andrew Gillum advocating Medicare for all, increasing the corporate tax rate, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And then on the other hand, Ron DeSantis, who is tying himself very closely to the president, although he did depart from him this week when the president sent out a very controversial tweet falsely denying how many people died in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts a little bit further about how, once again, Florida is the microcosm of the nation when it comes to our polarized politics.
Thank you for having me. Every election is about the future, so this election is no different in that regard. What makes this election so contentious and so much in the national forefront, it seems like all eyes are on this election. I listen to cable news, and every day they have something about the Florida governor's race. So it's good for you all. One thing I'd like to say that...
We are never bored. I'll say that.
Some interesting data that I think really covers some of your questions is whether or not Trump is actually going to be a big factor. You would think that he would be, particularly because DeSantis is really a stand-in for Trump in many ways. He ran his primary without any daylight between the two of them. Mm-hmm. But the Quinnipiac poll data that came out just a few days after the primary was interesting in the sense that it said that 51% of the likely voters that they polled said that Trump was not a factor in whether or not they were going to vote for DeSantis or Gillum. But then you have 22% said that their vote did in fact was going to express support for Trump, and then 24% said that their vote was going to be in opposition to Trump. So that is some interesting data. Clearly half of the electorate saying nope, not about Trump. But then
the other half saying that it is about Trump.
The other half is saying, and of course the other half is divided and is saying it is. So and then another interesting piece of data before I finish is that. The right direction, wrong track polling for Florida shows that 48% of voters believe that Florida is going in the right direction. 37% are saying it's going on the wrong track, which is, in fact, better than it is nationally. The national right direction, wrong track is 40% say it's in the right direction, and 53% are saying it's on the wrong track. So Florida is much better in terms of that right direction, wrong track data, which is always a really bellwether piece of data.
Carolyn, do you see this as a national election, just only Florida voting, though, for a governor?
I see Florida voting for a governor.
But is it a national election, though? If you understand what I'm trying to say,
it is a referendum on Trump. Yes, because
so the poll numbers,
he's already inserted himself in the race. However, I think that Florida voters are really concentrating on the things that are affecting them, and even though the polls may show, the state is going in the right direction, I truly believe that they are polling people who always vote, but I think Gillum, for instance, is reaching people who don't necessarily vote. And so they may have a different feeling. Those people may have been disenfranchised and have never gone to the polls. So how is it that we can be sure that this data is reflecting what the real pulse of the nation is?
Yeah, we saw that in the primary, Myra. Gillum really confounding expectations by turning out voters that had not voted as often in the past. We want to know what you think about this governor's race and all the issues in Florida. 305-995-1800. Now, when we talk about various voting blocks in Florida, I want to get your thoughts about news that affected our elections process this week. A federal judge's ruling that Spanish language sample ballots have to be provided ahead of the November 6th general election. The supervisor of elections in Manatee County said they'll comply with it, but they think it's a bad idea. At the same time, we've had a number of Puerto Rican residents move here in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria after it ravaged the island this year. And we saw this spectacle of Governor Rick Scott and gubernatorial candidate Ron DeSantis both distancing themselves from President Trump's inaccurate tweet, disputing the claims of his own government about how many Puerto Ricans died during and after Hurricane Maria. And so, Myra, how can these candidates continue to draw base voter support and at the same time walk this political line of distancing themselves from these controversial tweets coming out of the White House that really do, they bear a direct impact on what's going to happen here in Florida this November. That voting bloc in Florida is a considerable one. Your thoughts?
Well, let's start off first by saying it puts Ron DeSantis particularly in a difficult situation because he ran as the Trump candidate. I mean, as a Republican and registered in Florida, I received all his fundraising emails, and there wasn't one that didn't say endorsed by Trump, endorsed by Trump. Mm. I mean, he is the Trump guy. And, you know, when you go to the dance with the guy and you decide, oh, maybe I don't like the guy once the dance starts, but you're still stuck with the guy that brought you to the dance. And in DeSantis' case, he's going to have a real trouble with that. But that's the direction he chosen. So he chose, so he's going to have to deal with it. But you have Scott, on the other hand, has been noticeably trying to distance himself away from Trump. So
Governor Scott in his U.S. Senate race.
Governor Scott in his U.S. Senate race has noticeably tried to distance himself from Trump. But still, he's a Republican, and still he did solicit Trump support initially before he declared. So it's going to be a problem. It's an opening for the Democrats to hang Trump around their neck and to hang every day. Trump's going to come up with some tweet that both Scott and DeSantis are going to have to respond to. It's just going to be the game that's going to be played. And it's unfortunate that the tweet that Trump put out yesterday was so tone deaf, particularly at the time when a major hurricane is bearing down on the Carolinas. You just wonder, like, why? What was he thinking? And so that elicited the response so quickly of DeSantis and Scott to come out against that tweet. But DeSantis is, to my recollection, that's really the first time he's ever contradicted Trump on anything. So that was a real milestone.
Is Congressman DeSantis going to be able to create any daylight between himself and the president policy-wise that is going to be successful in appealing for the more than 3 million Florida voters who are non-party affiliated, then this, which is where the race is likely to be won?
I don't think anyone at this point is real clear on what DeSantis really stands for in Florida. I know he is in the middle of formulating.
He's the candidate for the Republican Party. How could
policy.
You say that?
Well, in fact, Adam Putnam used to constantly ding him on this because he was saying that DeSantis was the Fox News candidate. And, you know, he needs to spend more time in Florida. Here's a map. Go, you know, ride around. In fact, I think it was the Tampa Bay Times, I think it was. There was some Tampa newspaper the other day that actually had an article
That's
about
it. That's right. It was the Tampa Bay Times that discussed, and the DeSantis campaign said that the candidate was still mapping out some specifics around policies and wasn't ready to talk about those specifics yet, even though he has already won the Republican primary to be the Republican candidate for governor in the state of Florida.
That's a campaign commercial for Gillum.
And I think Carolyn, let me ask you as well. What about Ron DeSantis going particularly to Latino groups and trying to associate the term socialist with Andrew Gillum? How is that going to play? Not just with Cuban groups in South Florida, but across the state.
I think that people need to, you know, they understand what socialism is, especially those who are coming from Latin American countries that are facing such. You know, the state owns everything, and obviously Gillum is not saying that he wants to do that. So they have really very... there's no comparison. It's just a label, and we like to toss around labels.
But is it a label that could certainly find an audience, especially in South Florida, with the considerable Cuban-American audience and Cuban-American vote that's at stake?
Well, Cuban-Americans know exactly what socialism is, and I just don't see that... you know, really resonating with them because this country is not set up in such a way. I mean, it would take like a whole shift in political direction, maybe even a coup to get us to the point of...
But you don't think that rhetoric then resonates with the Cuban American vote?
No, and I've seen enough literature that says that they understand it because they've lived it. So, yeah, I think we need to get past that. And like she said, Myra said, you know, DeSantis, he does not have an agenda. I mean, I see that the Democrats are trying to portray him as anti-woman, anti-healthcare. But from day one, the Democratic nominee, he has always had an agenda. He's always said what it is that he wants to work on. And so, again, I think it's going to be about issues and change.
Let's squeeze in a call here before our first break. 305-995-1800, talking about the governor's campaign here in the state of Florida. We'll begin in South Florida, Miami Beach. Adam on line one. Go ahead, Adam. You're on the radio.
Hi, this is Adam. I just wanted to say I voted for Gillum. I didn't vote for an African-American to be governor. I voted for the best candidate to be governor, and I think that's the way Floridians feel. I think that the progressive vote is, what you call the progressive vote, is vastly underrated. Mr. Gillum didn't win as progressive against four other candidates. Mayor Levine ran as a progressive. Mr. Green ran as a progressive. Gillum ran as progressive, and their combined votes were vastly more than the votes for the moderate candidate. I think that Gillum has answers to the problems of the Floridians: healthcare, environment, education, and job security. And if he sticks to those issues, then there's no way we can lose. If we start doing ads on things like inclusion and feeling good, those don't answer people's questions.
Okay.
Gillum only has the answers to healthcare and the environment. For example, Rick Scott cut by tens of millions of dollars the monitoring the environment and monitoring our water supply and keeping it clean, and now we have Rick Scott's green slime in our canals and red tide, and Gillum wants to do something. That's what we should be talking about.
Adam, we'll talk about that, in just a matter of a few moments.
Had her entire life. Her entire life she's been covered, and this year when she had to go to the hospital, the health insurance company told us they wouldn't cover us for her hospital stay when she had a major back operation. And Gillum says that he's going to give us Medicare for All that will cover those things. And what do we get from DeSantis? DeSantis says that there's a monkey who wants to go and put socialism.
Adam, we got it. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. We appreciate it. We got a lot more callers to get to, Adam. Very passionate caller there, Adam, in Miami Beach. High information voter. I hope your daughter's doing okay, by the way, Adam. But this idea, Melissa, of the environment is one that we're going to be tackling here, too, because we're seeing that. That's right.
And, you know, people always say voters are low information, not public radio listeners.
No, far from it, as you just
following. They, like Adam, they are following these issues wherever you fall politically. So, we are going to take a quick break. But in a moment, continue the discussion about another potent election issue on the ballot this fall: green algae and red tide. You're listening to the Florida Roundup statewide from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup statewide this Friday. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Another issue showing up on the November ballot here in Florida. You can't get away from it, Melissa. It was just on the call, Adam, from Miami Beach, right? Red tide and green algae. Who will voters blame for the mess? It is certainly something that the candidates for the governor's race and for the U.S. Senate race are using in their advertisements. Steve Newborn is an environmental reporter for WUSF in Tampa. He's been covering the state's ongoing environmental disaster. Your phone calls, 305-995-1800. Myra Adams is still along with us, as is Carolyn Gunnis. Your calls again, 305-995-1800. Steve, the red tide began to creep up north of the Tampa Bay area. Describe it for us.
Right. It started several weeks ago. It started hitting southwest Florida pretty bad. Hundreds of thousands of fish started washing up on Sarasota and Manatee County beaches. And in the last week or so, it started reaching Pinellas County beaches, which is one of the main economic drivers of the Tampa Bay area. This has gotten so bad that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, has declared this an unusual mortality event. Now, what that is Washington speak for, we're going to find some money somewhere. We're going to get some scientists working on this. Try to figure out what causes it, which is one of the problems. Nobody really knows what causes red tide. It's been a big mystery. It's been around forever. It goes way back to the annals of the Spanish explorers when they first came here to these shores, reported on it. And it seems to be really, really bad this year, and nobody knows why. So hopefully these scientists will try to figure that out.
Steve, you know, it's really been interesting to see how this issue has been politicized. We heard the previous caller really blaming the governor, Rick Scott. Certainly environmental groups have been trying to hold him accountable. They say his claims on this issue are saying black is white and up is down. They find it very deceitful. At the same time, supporters of Rick Scott's campaign for Senate have pointed out that there are some matters of oversight when it comes to Florida's environmental stewardship that have been federal. But, you know, when we're looking at excessive nutrients in Lake Okeechobee, looking at it objectively, the governor's policies have made the problem of nutrients worse. I don't know if it's fair to blame the entire red tide outbreak this year on the governor. But as you look at this through a political lens, certainly the voters are going to hold someone accountable this fall. Who do you think they'll end up holding accountable? And when you look at this as a state versus a federal matter, who do you see as being more to blame?
I think everybody's to blame. This has been, at least with the Lake Okeechobee and the building of reservoirs south of Lake Okeechobee to handle all this nutrient-rich water, that's been going on for decades. I think the blame can be spread out pretty equally between both the current Democratic senator and the current Republican governor on this one. Congress allocates money, nothing ever seems to get done. So, you know, whether or not this has some kind of backlash at the polls, it's always been said that, you know, voters always suffer from collective amnesia. And it makes you wonder how much of, you know, how much this is really going to resonate at the polls. But I think it will come bite Rick Scott a little bit, because under his administration in the last 7 years, hundreds of millions of dollars has been cut from water management budgets, specifically the South Florida Water Management District, which handles the cleanups from Lake Okeechobee and the nutrient-rich water flowing down through the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie rivers. That's already become a campaign issue with Senator Nelson. Mm-hmm. You know, where it goes from here, who knows? I'm not a political scientist, so you have to ask one of them.
Steve, let me bring back in our commentators here. Myra Adams, a conservative writer, you've wrote this week in Real Clear Politics in a column commentary you wrote, the ballot box test of this governor's race here in Florida, it'll be a test of left-leaning policies in a major state. Do you include the environment? Is that seen as a left-leaning policy?
I don't believe it's a left-leaning policy. I think it's more of an emotional problem that affects every Floridian. We have an economy that is very based on tourism as one of its largest economic drivers. So when you are seeing this horrible situation going on, harming the environment and harming the fish and wildlife, it's a problem. It's just an emotional problem, and I think people are going to vote. They're going to use it certainly as one of the issues that they're going to look at and decide who they're going to vote for. But I don't see the environment as a left or right issue. I mean, you're always, of course, going to get into the climate change, and Republicans aren't supportive of climate change as much as the left-leaning is.
It's not supportive, it's acknowledging climate change, I believe, is what usually the debate seems to be about.
Right, exactly. Now, whether or not this current environmental crisis in Florida is going to be blamed on climate change, I'm sure somebody probably already has. But my gut tells me that Rick Scott, as the governor, as the CEO of the state, you, in fact, are blamed for things that are going wrong, usually more than the senator who's sitting in Washington. So, but again, it's going to be up to the voters how they decide whether or not it affects their vote.
And it's let us know, voters, what is on your mind. 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup this Friday. Jerry is in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. Hi, Jerry. Good afternoon.
Hey, Melissa. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, great. I just enjoy these roundups. I enjoy all your shows. And I just want to say that the last commentator's questions, comments about the environment, yes, it's not neither a right or left problem, that's for sure. However, Republicans have been far less concerned with environmental issues than Democrats have. Andrew Gillum and Chris King have a super strong platform of environmental concerns and will implement that platform. Rick Scott has cut, as the other commentator said, millions and millions and millions of dollars for environmental protection of our water. I'm from Southern California. I've seen what lax enforcement has done to Southern California. I love Florida, but it can be ruined so quickly. I just encourage people to look to the Democrats, to look to Andrew Gillum, especially for those who are not affiliated. Look to Andrew Gillum and Chris King to keep Florida from destroying itself by lax regulation of these agricultural runoffs and, the septic tank issues, the entire mess that we're in.
Jerry, that's Jerry in Ponte Vedra Beach. Thanks for that, Jerry. You know, Carolyn, Myra mentioned a minute ago that in Florida, environmental issues are very nuanced because our environment is our economy in this state. And so, as the caller pointed out, on the Democratic ticket, you see a very progressive approach to dealing with the environment. However, Congressman DeSantis has spoken out pretty vocally himself about the need to clean up this algae mess and has made a show out of saying he won't take money from Big Sugar. So in this state, environmental politics are a little interesting, aren't they? Because so much of our economy derives from having a beautiful environment.
Correct. And you see that many visitors already are not coming, as some reports have been coming out of the Fort Myers area. They're saying that, the numbers are down. If the guides don't go fishing, if they don't go out on the water, then they don't get the women who come to shop. So the economy is definitely hurting in some ways. But I think to solve this particular environmental problem, they have to go all the way back to the development plans, because it was poor development that has set up this
It's a cascading effect of what we're experiencing, certainly with the green algae.
Exactly. And so, the corrective measures will have to start at the beginning.
Steve Newborn, let me ask you, as you've talked to folks up in the Tampa Bay area, just north of there, certainly we're not in the high season by any stretch of the imagination, but when we see the video and the pictures of the dead fish lining the beaches and the what should be the crystal clear water of the Gulf of Mexico being this kind of soupy color, are there concerns about the soon to be high season of tourism not to be such a high season?
Yeah, you're right, Tom. If there was anything fortunate about this is that it happened in the lull between the end of summer when kids go back to school and the beginning of the season when everything cools off. But just to show you how important this is to officials out here, Pinellas County officials hired a fleet of boats. They just chartered a whole bunch of fishing boats who can't catch anything anyway because they're all dead, to go offshore and scoop all these tons of dead fish, hundreds of thousands of them, and haul into the county landfill where they waive the tipping fee so they don't have to pay to get all this stuff in there. And the point of that is that the more they capture offshore, the less hits the beaches and the less stink, pardon my use of that pun, you get from tourists. And word doesn't get out to tourists in Germany and Quebec, wherever they come from, that you don't want to come here. So they're kind of taking a proactive stance. But unfortunately, in Manatee and Sarasota counties, just south of here, the pictures of canals and beaches just littered with dead fish, reports of dead dolphins and manatees, That's going to resonate far and wide with the tourism sector.
It's 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup. Calls coming in from around the state this Friday as we talk about the politics of our environmental mess in the state. Dave is on Jacksonville's south side. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Hey, morning, Melissa. Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
I came to Florida in 1974 to help the Harbor Branch Foundation and Smithsonian Institution study the nutrient loading in the Indian River Lagoon. That was 45 years ago. And what I have observed as an environmental engineering professional is that the governors of this state, up until Governor Scott, have unanimously supported the regulatory framework. Governor Childs, Governor Graham, even Charlie Crist. And we now have this anti-regulation fervor within the Republican Party, where they say we got to deregulate to make the economy more efficient, but they focus on environmental regulations, and they ignore the fact that Adam Smith, who's a capitalist, the father of capitalism, told us that the role of government is to protect the commons from exploitation by the short-term profiteers and the mercantilists. And the Republicans have turned the whole definition of capitalism on their head, and it's showing up in the environmental degradation, this green slime that we have, not just in the in South Florida, but up here in the St. Johns River, and even in our springs. You've got to look at the science. You've got to recognize that facts are real. They're not alternative facts. And you've got to elect politicians who accept facts and science and just forget about the ideology. But if they're going to go to economic ideology, they got to recognize that Adam Smith, father of capitalism, said that government has the role to regulate the economy to protect the commons from exploitation.
The wealth of nations.
Like I said, educated listeners on this show, you will get the smartest callers around on the Florida Roundup. That's Dave, Jacksonville Southside. Thanks for that, Dave. Okay, Myra Adams, what about that? Is that message going to carry the day in the fall? And I believe he was accurate in pointing out that there's been a long tradition of governors in this state serving as environmental stewards until recently. So what about that?
Well, I'd like to just step back a little bit and just think about something. We live in a very fragile peninsula, the state of Florida is, and there's just been tremendous population growth and tremendous growth of industry, tremendous amounts of tourism. All these people that have been coming to the state, and now we are the third largest state in population in the United States. So certainly our environment is impacted by all these aggressive policies to bring more tourism and mm-hmm. to bring more business and to grow Florida, more jobs. I mean, Governor Scott has been a proponent of bringing more industry and bringing more jobs to Florida. He was the jobs governor. And
right.
I mean, that is why you could say the Florida economy has been going well, but there certainly is the flip side of that. And combined with I think an unfortunate natural occurrence of something like red tide that has been around since the Spaniards were here, but this year it's just gotten bigger and bigger and out of control. And whether you can blame Rick Scott, I don't know if I'm going to blame Rick Scott. I don't know who to blame. I think somebody I spoke to recently said, why don't you just blame the fact that this state has just grown
so
much?
Do voters want blame, though, or do they want solutions? Do they want policies that are going to be implemented and compromised with what is likely to remain, certainly will remain, a Republican legislature in Tallahassee?
I think blame always comes first, and then I think policies are a natural outgrowth of blame. But people have to be angry to drive government into action, and right now people are angry.
Carolyn, do you think
it's a mess?
You know, the economy continues to rank as kind of the number one issue when voters in Florida are given a list of issues. What's important to them? The economy is there. Carolyn, is the environment quickly rising in your estimation?
I think it's tied to the economy, especially for some people. And once you start hitting people's pocketbooks, once you start hitting their earnings, changing their lifestyle, also people are uncomfortable. You know, it smells bad. It looks bad. and could be harmful. I hear it hurts sometimes when you inhale this green algae. So blue-green algae. So I think, you know, coupled with all of that, that is environment and economy, you know, coming head-to-head. Yeah. And I guess that's why more people are now paying attention to it, because the problem has been ongoing.
And Steve Newborn, in the short time that we have left, let's make clear to listeners that these two candidates would approach this differently in terms of how they would work on environmental issues.
Are you talking about the governor candidates or the Senate candidates?
Both.
Well, like we said earlier, we don't really know where Ron DeSantis stands on this. He just took a tour of Lake Okeechobee. If he's formulated a policy, it hasn't reached my ears yet. And Andrew Gillum has come out as a green candidate, as he has all along. That's going to be one of the key parts of his campaign. That's his natural constituency. So I would predict that Gillum is going to really hammer along this, the blame that we're talking about on the existing administration. And I think that's going to be a big part of his campaign. As for DeSantis, well, I guess we're going to find out soon, right?
We'll find out soon. And lots of calls waiting on hold as we keep talking all of these issues on the Florida Roundup. Steve Newborn, environmental reporter with WUSF. Thanks for being on the show. We appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
And everything from the environment to mail-in ballots, even a flap over the governor's plan to appoint some new justices on his way out the door. We're going to talk about that as well after a short break. Lots of politics served up hot and fresh this Friday here on the Florida Roundup. We are statewide from Florida Public Radio. Keep listening.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening and supporting public media in the Sunshine State. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. And as we continue talking politics this Friday, another issue that caught our eye involves Governor Scott's plan to seize upon language in the Florida Constitution to make what are sometimes called midnight appointments. In other words, selecting replacements for the current state Supreme Court on his way out the door. And this is something that some legal and political analysts say could trigger a legal and constitutional crisis. The League of Women Voters and other groups have filed a lawsuit against this, urging the Florida Supreme Court to rule that the next governor, not Governor Scott, should be the one to make these appointments. This is a complicated story to sort of break down, and it's one that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. But let me get both of your thoughts on this. This is an important matter only because these justices are certainly going to be ruling on a number of important issues in the next cycle, whoever is elected governor next. Carolyn Gunness of the Miami Times, how do you see this issue?
I see this as Rick Scott, you know, being Rick Scott, not working for the people, working for the party. And, you know, I hope that, you know, they block this lawsuit blocks his chances to do this, because, every administration should be given the opportunity to, at least appoint the justices. I mean, that was the same thing they were talking about with Trump. You know, they didn't want people, a couple of justices who wanted to retire. They didn't want them to retire because, before he got a chance, but now he's appointing two justices. Scott is going to allow our Supreme Court to be more conservative if he gets these appointments. And
Myra, how do you feel about this? I mean, the governor has, I think it's fair to say, long seen the Florida Supreme Court as a thorn in his side. They've blocked various moves he's tried to make on a number of issues. And so what about these claims that this could trigger a crisis, a constitutional crisis in Florida? Agree or disagree?
I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really speak to whether or not it's going to trigger a mm-hmm. constitutional crisis. But looking at this from a purely political point of view, I would say that this is Rick Scott's way of trying to really get the Republican base all excited, and perhaps the conservative Republican base. And so they'll turn out for him, and which will be a very, very close race. And this close, and the outcome of the Senate race could, in fact, determine the balance of the U.S. Senate. Already, it's the most expensive race in the country. $50 million has been spent so far. Rick Scott has totally outspent Bill Nelson, but yet it's tied. It's a tied mm-hmm. race in view of the fact that Nelson has just not been really a big factor so far. Scott has just been on the air, and now Nelson's going to try to catch up in that. But the main thing is that I think this is a way for Scott to try to get the base excited. I'm really not familiar with this issue enough, but just my gut feeling tells me the timing of that is something that sounds like a good political
move.
Well,
I think the timing of this is really interesting, Melissa, because, you know, for highly engaged voters, you're really focused on mm-hmm. the judiciary and the American system right now because of the Supreme Court nominee of Brett Kavanaugh and the hearings that a lot mm-hmm. of folks witnessed, of course, over the past couple of weeks, and the pending Senate judiciary vote on that nomination, as well as the full Senate vote on it. So a focus on a state Supreme Court and the politicalization of that can have certain ramifications and echo with certain base, Myra, as you mentioned. But what I'm curious about from Carolyn and from Myra is if this effort on the governor is successful or not, but as it continues on, does it help Ron DeSantis in trying to excite a conservative base in Florida? Does it help a Gillum trying to excite a Democratic base in the state of Florida?
I think there's a statistic that I'm going to throw out that might answer that question. There are two polls that have been done recently on likely voters, and in the DeSantis-Gillum race, only 8% of likely voters were undecided. That was in the Florida Chamber of Commerce poll. In the Quinnipiac poll, only 6% of voters were undecided. So we'll see what issues are going to resonate, because yeah. right now it's mm-hmm. obvious that people have made up their mind. They've run to their left and right corners.
Certainly could be, but it could be a 1.5-point race.
As we've seen in Florida before.
Yeah.
So the thing that I really wish that he doesn't do it, why I don't want him to do it, is because we need more diversity on the bench. And I just don't see Scott taking that into consideration, and also being hasty about it. Yeah, I'm not sure that we're going to get what we want. So, I really do hope that he doesn't make these appointments.
He literally would have a 12-hour window to do this when you look at the timetable. Pretty extraordinary. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't the type of issue that voters typically get all worked up about, Tom, but I've given up trying to predict.
Yeah, exactly. Amen.
At right. this point, anything is possible.
It
right?
is, absolutely. We got a lot of issues from callers across the state, some talking about the socialist label, talking about mail-in ballots, climate change. 305-995-1800. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Myra, you just mentioned the big money that's being spent in the U.S. Senate race with Governor Scott against Senator Bill Nelson. Enrique in Miami has questions about politics and money. Go ahead, Enrique. You're up next.
How are you doing? My question to the panel is if there any of the people on the panel have an idea of what percentage of the campaign money these politics are bringing to the table. Is coming from either the pharmaceutical industry or from the agricultural industry. Where is the money coming the most from the NRA? I think people do not have the sense of where these people are really leaning towards. And obviously, if all that money is coming from that place, it means that they're going to be pushing for an agenda to favor those people. My other point is I don't see how nobody sees that these big polls that they make, like we just saw for the parking spots, That's just another reason, another way for them to just canalize everything to what a commissioner makes nowadays, which is over $250,000, or our superintendent of education makes almost $1 million. It's just an absurd money that these people are getting paid.
Yeah, Enrique, I'm not sure those numbers you have, at least in South Florida, are certainly not correct in terms of what commissioners get paid or the superintendent. Not that they're not insignificant numbers, but nonetheless. But to your central question there, who's getting the money? Myra, I think Enrique really is after some of the soft dollars here and some of the political action committee dollars when he's asking about what industries are at play.
Right. At this point, I can't speak specifically to that. I'm just looking at some data that I got off of CNBC that was talking about the direct contributions that Nelson and Scott have received up. This is dated August 28th, this information. But at this point, Rick Scott, of course, has largely self-funded his campaign.
Sure, which he did the two previous campaigns
as
well.
He contributed $20.7 million, and then the large individual contributions to Bill Nelson totaled $11.7 million, whereas the large individual contributions to Rick Scott were $8.4 million. On the governor's side, of course, you have Andrew Gillum. Half of his campaign money in the primary were from George Soros and Tom Steyer. So we're talking about lefty mega gazillionaires who basically used Andrew Gillum as a test case to see if a progressive candidate in a major state could win a nomination. And boy, they got their money's worth. But at this point, I don't know the exact data of how much what industries are spending on the candidates, but
sure.
I'm sure that data will come out. We just got out of the primary, so there hasn't really been time yet.
Mail-in ballots, though, overseas go out in the next week or so, so there's no rest for the weary here.
That is the truth. Let's take one last quick call. It's Joanna in Boca Raton. Joanna, go ahead.
Yes, I'm very much concerned about the fact that we have underfunded our schools, and also the safety of the schools, which I feel like the governor and also including our legislature have really let the people of Florida down. There's no way to attract corporations to our state if we have underfunded schools. And I'm very
Carolyn, thanks for that, Joanna. Carolyn Gunness, we haven't discussed that much this hour, but it's certainly another big issue for the voters.
Indeed, and she is absolutely right when she puts the blame squarely on legislators, because you know, they're the ones who have allowed funding to be you know, we give money to Tallahassee and we only get 10% back for our teachers. And so in South Florida there is a problem with paying teachers what they should earn, and also funding students. And now we have this added problem of securing students, mm-hmm. which has been a problem for a long time because they've been a soft target for a while. And, you know, it took a real tragedy to get
to
attention
bring it to
it.
The forefront. And I'm so sorry we couldn't get into that more. Maybe next Friday. And I hope you'll both come back and join us. Carolyn Gunness, executive editor of the Miami Times, writer Myra Adams. Thanks for being on the show. And that is our show today, the Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Kevin Mershart and Bridget O'Brien are our producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our technical director this hour, WLRN's Director of Radio Operations, Peter Maritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next week.